All right, John the Armsman with Glenn.
And John.
And here we are in a wonderful November.
Where the fuck did October go?
Where did 2019 go? Are we those old people now that sit around and are like, oh, where have all the years gone? And yes, I'm drinking milk for everybody looking at the freaking show.
Right? Weirdo.
Milk was a poor choice.
Milk was an excellent choice. I took my kids to get some donuts this morning and they bought some milk, all these little milks, and they drank like half of them.
And you didn't bring donuts for the rest of the class?
You need some celery, John.
Damn.
You need to go fuck yourself.
Alrighty. Thank you to all of our patrons for participating in the show. Thank you for your support. Remember to check out all the extra content, blogs, show reviews. Send us your show ideas. You guys get preference on that. And the extra show every month, of course, taking place on the first week usually of the month. And that is today. So our extra show will be happening today. So make sure that you look for that. We're coming to you from the AR500 Armor Studio, and this month's product is, James, I thought you were going to wear it, James.
I couldn't. It was too small.
Oh, James is
He's so big.
So big, so jacked. It's the Valkyrie Plate Carrier. This one is an amazingly sexy multicam black.
Pumpkin spice latte for tactical people.
Oh, my gosh. It is pumpkin spice latte for oh, my God, there's armor in it.
Dude, if I did that, my shoulder might actually completely quit on me if I had done what you just did.
Otherwise, it was armor. I'm just a carrier. All right, here it is. You guys can see it on the video there. It's very, very sexy. The Valkyrie, what's their design purpose, John? I know you just got one. What's really the design purpose behind the Valkyrie over other carriers? I mean, aren't carriers just freaking carriers, man?
No. Not all carriers are created equally. I know the Valkyrie, at least I'm 98% certain the Valkyrie is part of their U.S.-made line. Mm. And they are very compliant. It's got a couple of built-in features that some of the other carriers don't have. Like, you've got the small built-in admin pouch up here, which is...
Candy pouch.
Thank you. Whatever you want to use it for. And then also in your flap, you've got the ability to put kangaroo pouches in. Mm. I mean, that's really it. It's a nice carrier. I've got one that I've run
I like the padding.
A little bit. Yeah, the shoulder pads on it are freaking phenomenal. So, I mean, it's a nice carrier with some added features. It has the mesh in the cummerbund, which is better than, in my opinion, it's better than the skeletonized cummerbunds that a lot of carriers have these days, because you still have a little bit of support there, but you still
have
a lot of
breathability. I like the structure that it adds without those little skeletonized things, not a lot of structure on the side.
Yeah.
You have to use them.
I think it's a pretty neat carrier.
So check them out over AR500Armor.com. Make sure you follow them on Facebook and all that good stuff. Had a great Halloween.
Me too.
Yeah. Had the kids over, trick-or-treating, blew up the inflatable screen in the front yard, played some movies in the front yard, and Drew loves to decorate, so we decorated the hell out of the freaking house, and the kids helped us with that, and everybody dressed up and went trick-or-treating, and the kids got a sick, stupid amount of candy.
Oh, my gosh.
There was a freaking guy just up the road from us who's passing out full-size candy bars, so, and we did not get a lot of trick-or-treaters, sadly to say. I had Bob Ross out in front of my house. Garrett dressed up as Bob Ross.
Nice.
He had a little paint thing, the beard and the mustache. Bob Ross shirt. He had a Bob Ross shirt of Bob Ross painting happy trees. It was very funny. He did a good job. He was playing it very well. Very well. He was painting. He has this voice he does. Sounds just like Bob Ross. He'd have his little palette, and he'd go. He'd dip his little paintbrush in, and he'd paint on someone. He'd go, just paint on you, just a happy little asshole. and then he'd go, what'd he say? He got some red, and then he'd go like, it'd paint a little jihadi red, but we got to follow that up with a little crusade silver. I'm like, God. Who is this kid?
You raised a monster, bro. That's hilarious.
Oh, it was great, man. So, yeah, it was good, man. Had a good time, lots of candy, good times, movies, whatever. So, how about you guys? You probably don't get any freaking trick-or-treaters, I would imagine.
Oh, we don't stay at home. We go over to my sister-in-law's house. She lives in a neighborhood. So we go over there, and all the kids dress up, and we all go walk around their neighborhood. Mm. One of the houses in their neighborhood, they do a haunted house. Like, the whole house is, like, full-on decorated out. Like, wooden, like, pallets and stuff. And they've got, like, a graveyard and skeletons. And they've got a DJ. They have a freaking DJ with, like, speakers and like a DJ booth, and they're like jamming out, and you can hear them throughout the whole neighborhood. It's actually pretty cool. Bunch of people do like haunted houses in their garages, and you know, everybody dresses up and they'll sit around with campfires and couches out on their little driveways. It's a good time. The kids always enjoy it, and we always have way more candy than we need. And then Dad collects his taxes.
Yeah.
I have to teach my children about taxes at an early age.
Yep.
Dad gets 60% of this. You only get 40%.
60%.
I'm kind of fat. Screw you. Yeah. All right.
Kind of.
It's a heavy tax.
Yeah. It's a heavy tax. You know, got to pay for that gas somehow. Because I just bag it up and sell it. It's not true.
I resell it on the swap meet.
On swap meet. On Facebook.
Pregnant Florida woman uses AR-15 to fatally shoot armed intruder. Two armed men broke into the house and pistol whipped the husband before wife pulled out their legally possessed weapon. I like how they always add that. And opened fire. I love that they say opened fire. Like, in my head. Exactly. That's exactly.
Fucking Rambo at the end of part two.
With the 60 in the belt. Yeah. And I just see this pregnant lady just like, just freaking shooting. No, she fired a round. She fired a single round. Now, that being said, 100% hit. She fired a round, not just hit the guy, but killed him. He ran outside, died in a ditch where he deserves to die, apparently.
Perfect.
I'm always curious on whether or not these things, it says, we also know this is not a random act. This is the...
It was a home invasion. Most home invasions are.
Yeah, let me back up a little bit on the story. Two unknown males broke in, made demands of them. The male victim, who's a homeowner, began to get pistol whipped and beat up. During that incident, the female homeowner retrieved a firearm, which was in the house legally, fired one round, which struck the male victim that was deceased in the ditch.
What about the other guy?
They came in with two normal pistols, and my AR stopped it. My wife evened the playing field and kept them from killing me. He suffered a fractured eye socket, a fractured sinus cavity, and concussion to go along with 20 stitches from the attack. The husband, whose 11-year-old daughter was at home during the home invasion, said he and wife did not know their attackers. We also know this was not a random act. This family was probably targeted. So, I mean, who knows? I always wonder if this stuff's drug-related, honestly. I mean, I don't know.
Good thing that dude's wife was there.
Yeah. So, heads up, ladies.
Yeah, Mama Bear took it home.
Yeah, she did. 8 months pregnant, too. Freaking not messing around. Single shot. Dome that dude is what I'm guessing.
Not if he bled out.
That's true.
I'm guessing probably somewhere in this general area. Somewhere maybe. Between the belly button.
I'm going to go with sucking chest wound.
I don't know. I'm going to go with dumbed him. That's what I'm going for. That's why I like to think of it. It's my story. I tell however I want.
Yeah, all right. Yeah,
chick domed him.
Shot him.
Game over.
He ran out. The back of his head split wide open.
Just
he
managed blasted to run out, dude.
Outside.
Yeah.
And lay down in a ditch.
One eye hanging out. Horror movie style. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys ready for this? Don't look at my screen. Don't look at my screen. Military investigating blank unit over gay porn allegations. I'll give you a hint. It's an army unit. Military investigating blank army unit over gay porn allegations. Who is it?
82nd.
He's got it. Give it to the man. We had a listener send this story to me this morning, and I'm like, my response was, it's the 82nd Airborne. What did you expect? You know what I mean? Army officials are investigating allegations that members of the celebrated 82nd Airborne Division appear on a gay pornography website. Authorities at Fort Bragg began an inquiry into whether the paratroopers' actions violated military conduct code. I mean, no. Have you been in a barracks? apparently that's a thing now. But
it's like a Tuesday for them.
I thought it was funny. Look, man, I have some friends here in the 82nd, like our good buddy Sinclair. But you know, I'm just saying. it didn't surprise me at all.
Takes all kinds. I would have been the same level of surprise had it been the 101st or
no. Anyone. How fucking dare you? No. Choke yourself with my hand.
Is that how Epstein died?
I've been in both units, and the 82nd is definitely gayer than the 101st.
Did you start in the 82nd?
No, I started on Fort Bragg in like a signal unit or something. It was really lame. I made some good friends there, though. Then I moved on to Pathfinder Company.
Then you went 101st.
Yeah, 101st.
Then did you end it in 82nd?
Yeah. Oh, well, I ended it in the schoolhouse.
Oh, that's right. Well,
during the course, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Well, I had a good weekend. Did a whole class yesterday, defensive carbine. James was there helping out. Jason was there teaching. It's a great class, man. What did we end up with? 14, 15? 14, I think, something like that. Which was great. We had a couple who had to cancel last minute, so it's actually kind of nice because it made the class a more even balance. But phenomenal freaking class. Really great shooters. Literally from like brand spanking new shooters to really experienced shooters. Oh, yeah. And as always, it's just a phenomenal mix of skill set and talent and capability. And by the end, we saw everybody progress. I mean, you know, I love teaching, man. I really genuinely, honestly love teaching and watching people improve.
Oh, yeah. That's the best part about it, especially like two of those students yesterday.
Yeah.
The day ones. They
were brand spanking new.
Yeah, and by the end of the day, they were hitting steel like they were pros.
Well, the one guy got like second place in or third place or something, Top Shot.
Yeah,
third place,
I think it was third place.
So, you know, he started out the day with like, which end does the pointy rocks come out of? Yeah. And just by listening to us and following what we were doing and paying attention to what he was doing and really putting in the effort that he put in, man, I think it was third place he came
in. And he had a broken finger with a pin in it.
Yeah.
That's like, ooh, dude, you're dedicated.
Yeah. I mean, it matters.
Really want to be there.
So, yeah, so that was a great class. And then I ran my very first Ragnar relay. So I had been to some Ragnars. Well, I went to a Ragnar last year in Phoenix just to kind of go see what it was about and support Drew, who was there running it. And then we went together with her team to go to the Zion one, but it got canceled because of all the weather, which actually just turned into a badass freaking camp trip for us or whatever. So this was like the first time I ran it. Now, I am not what you might call a runner. I run, all right? This is the longest distance-wise I've run in a long, long time. So over the course of not quite a full day, we started at 1 o'clock. So it's a relay race. You know, one person goes out, comes back, hands the bib off, next person goes. And there's three different loops. There's a, a 4.5-mile green loop, which is kind of relatively mild in elevation gain. It's a relatively flat run, but it's still a trail run, so you're up and down a little bit. There's like a 4.5-mile yellow loop, which is the most technical loop, and it's up and down and over a mountain and through these washes and lots of little doo-wops and everything. It was quite a bit of a run. And then there's an almost 7-mile red loop that is the longest and the least technical, but the most elevation gain. You basically run, you start the run going straight up a freaking mountain. And I was pretty proud of myself, man. I averaged a 10-minute mile in over 15.5 miles. So I was, my fastest mile was about 9 minutes on the trail, which I'm pretty happy with because, you know, your road running time is usually a little bit less than that. So, and that's about how it is with me. So I was actually pretty, happy with the performance. I definitely did not train enough for it. You know,
nobody ever does.
And nobody ever does. But like, I have a bad habit of like just going from like the couch to whatever it is I'm doing.
We got
to
do that Ragnar tomorrow. Where are my running shoes at, babe?
Sack. Like when we did Sack last year, when I dissed Ragnar, like when we do the adventure races or competitions, people are always like, how much do you train? People are like, how do you train for competitions? I'm like, I eat some tacos and then I go. You know what I mean? Like,
or I drink some apple juice. I drink some apple juice. Really shitty hotel muffins.
Oh. So, I mean, it happens. But I did run a little bit, you know, mostly because Drew's involved with the running club. And so we run, you know, once or twice a week, but not nearly as much as I should have been, honestly. I would say I'm not sore, really. Or I had some tight muscles yesterday during class, like some tight quads a little bit, some tight calves a little bit. But I was happy to say, like, no injuries to my feet, no blisters, no problems. Really great. We're Salomon. I've been wearing Salomon running shoes for a while. Not a big fan of their boots, but really like their running shoes.
I love their boots.
They make great boots. They make good boots.
I can't stand their running
boots. They just don't fit me. Their boots don't fit me. But
I have the same issue with their running shoes. I can't wear them.
Yeah, so like I really have had, you know, a good time running the race and had a great team. And Drew's a captain of our team. She did a phenomenal job leading everybody. We ended up coming in the top 10% actually of all the participants. So I mean, we did pretty good as a team, and I was pretty happy with my performance. So if it's something that you're interested in, like, don't think you have to go out and like marathon train to run this thing. You don't. I didn't. for sure. You know, I was running, even on my runs, I was running like 3 to 4 miles once or twice a week. That's it. I mean, honestly, I probably should have been running more and it would have been easier for me. But I was certainly nowhere near the top, you know, contenders. But I completed the event without injury and without really any great problem.
And if you sign up, Ragnar actually has a free training program that you can download.
They
based
do.
Based on the races that...
They do.
The different races.
So. Yeah, which would have been smart for me to follow because we actually had it hanging on our fridge. I didn't follow it for shit. So, yeah. But it was a great event. Really good time. And then afterwards, we went, grabbed another buddy of ours and went and ran the Rugged Maniac, which is like a short obstacle course, like a 3 mile obstacle course. And that was a ton of fun. So just more running, I guess. I don't know. I ended up running like damn near 20 miles in less than 24 hours, which is a lot for me.
Yeah, that's a lot for anybody.
That's a lot. That's a lot of freaking mileage to
that's
run.
That's more miles than I've ran since I've been out of the Army.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, that may be the most miles I've ever run in a 24 hour period, maybe ever.
Yeah.
Actually.
15?
20.
20?
When you add Rugged Maniac. So.
Yeah, I think I've capped out at a half marathon for like a 1 day period.
So Rugged Maniac was a lot of fun. A pretty simple event. You know, they're not quite as extravagant as some of the other ones I've been to, but some really good obstacles, lots of mud, lots of, you know, purposely making you get into the mud. But they had some really fun obstacles, and I was really, really happy to do it with Drew, and then our buddy Brad went and did it with us as well. So it was great, man. It was a good weekend of events. So I think the biggest thing is just to remind people, like, you got to get out and do these things. You got to get up, you got to sign up for them, and you got to go do them, whatever it is. I don't care if it's a small event, big event, whatever it is you've been thinking about doing, just go do it. Don't think you have to prep and prep and prep and, like, devote your life to it. I mean, if you can, awesome. I should have probably prepped more, like I said. But if you don't think you can't get out there and complete it.
True story.
And the events are just fun. Like, they always make them very fun. You camp out, like at Ragnar, you camp out. They have a big village. They're like playing movies all night long and shit. It's a pretty in-depth situation. So anyway, there you go. Anything else? Any other news? Anything we missed?
No, I think Pregnant Lady takes the cake on news today.
Yeah, she's kind of the thing.
Yeah. Right?
All right, Red Bar Gear Moment, go.
Jumper cables and basic tools. Mm. So, if you're an adult, male or female, and you drive a car on a regular basis, you should for sure have jumper cables. You should for sure have a fire extinguisher in your vehicle. You should for sure have a first aid kit in your vehicle. And you should also have some basic tools, like a 10 millimeter socket, a ratchet that fits it, maybe some open-end box end wrenches, some screwdrivers. These are things that as adults we should all own and know how to use correctly. And you should also know how to change tire in your car. And that's what I've got for you today.
Okay.
And you should also check your equipment before you have to change that tire and make sure that your tire has air in it.
Yeah. Make sure your spare has air. It's a good one. It's a good point.
Red Wire Gear Bone brought to you by RedWireGear.com. All right, moving on to our topic of the day, which is a Q&A, and sadly, we did not really get that many questions. We did get...
What?
We got like a dozen.
Oh.
So, I don't know. I don't know how we get so many listeners and no one interacts with us. I don't understand that. Are people scared? You get scared? I don't understand. Yeah, we told you, you ask a question, we're going to answer. So, we're going to answer these questions, and when we run out of this, we're going to go to the questions that we've been asking on our Independence Training storyline on Instagram, and we're going to answer some of those. A little bit differently because I'm sitting here with you guys instead of me just doing it. So first questions got asked. What actions are needed if a person shoots a wild animal in self-defense? All right, that's a pretty good question. So this is going to vary from state to state. In the state of Arizona, you have to be able to justify to a reasonable person that the animal you shot in self-defense was needed in self-defense, right? So you have to articulate that. As an example, if you're in your backyard and a coyote comes in your backyard, you can't just blast it, right? You have to be able to articulate that the coyote was being aggressive to you. Now, also in the state of Arizona, and this is important, you can't shoot animals that are attacking your animals. You can't shoot animals that are attacking your livestock. You can't shoot animals that are attacking your pets. Pets and animals, livestock, etc.
are property
in the state of Arizona. You can't use lethal force to protect property in the state of Arizona. So this is a state of Arizona thing. Now, livestock is a little bit different when you're talking about predation, but that's a whole other situation that if you have livestock, you need to talk to the Arizona Game and Fish about the reasonable use of force against predators that are destroying your
basically
livestock.
Basically attacking your way of life.
You need to talk to the game fish about their regulations concerning that because they're very specific, all right? Now, outside of that, just for individual person, we're going to talk about in-city limits and out-of-city limits. In-city limits, if you unlawfully kill an animal, not only may you face charges of animal cruelty, poaching, etc., but you're also potentially going to get unlawful discharge of a firearm within the city limits. If you're shooting it, right? If you're beating it with a club or whatever, well, then that's what it is. If you're out in the county, we don't have to worry about the city limits thing. But we always have to be able to differentiate between the two animals. We have like privately owned animals and wild game animals. A wild game animal, you're going to have to articulate to the Arizona Game and Fish. Now, what's the proper way to do this? I'm going to give you an actual real-life example. So I have actually killed an animal in self-defense. I killed a javelina in self-defense, and here's what happened. I was predator hunting. I had my shotgun and a pistol on my hip. I used to carry a 38 special on my hip a lot when I was out predator hunting because I could carry snake shot on it real easy. So I've got my 12-gauge shotgun. I'd killed two coyotes up on top of this hill, and so I only had three rounds left in the gun. And so I'm walking back down to my truck, and it's this big snowy area. This was up near Prescott. And as I'm walking down the trail, there's this group of javelina. Well, javelina are kind of dumb. They're kind of blind. You know, they're a little aggressive. And so I kind of want to just get them off the trail. This is a game trail that I'm on. And I can't really bust through the brush, and the snow's kind of thick. So I pick up a rock, and I kind of throw it in the middle of them. Like, hey, scatter, piggies, you know. And they don't. So I pick up a little bit of a bigger rock and throw it into them, and I hit one of them. And it's like, you know, and does this little, ow, you hit me, little noise. And this freaking big old boar just turns and starts charging down the trail of me. Well, I'm like, look, man. Look, pig, I possess a certain set of skills. You know what I mean? I'm not going to run from you. So I just start blasting this freaking pig. Well, I'm walking backwards as I'm doing this, trying to create a little bit of distance. I'm basically just moving back down the game trail. So I'm just boom, boom, boom. I drain all three of my freaking rounds out of my shotgun. I know I'm hitting. Like, I don't suck at shooting. I know I'm hitting. This is not stopping him. So I'm like, shit, I literally, legitimately, the only time I've ever had to do this, transition to a secondary, because I'm out of freaking rounds in my shotgun, and I pull out my 38, and I shoot this thing just one time. And I shot it one time, and I always carried three jacket hollow point plus P38s, and then three snake shots. And so I always made sure the JHPs were up first, because if I needed a snake shot, I could usually dial over to it in the cylinder. So I just blast this thing, like, almost contact distance, and it curves off the trail and dies. And I'm like, holy shit, like, I literally...
I just pooped myself.
I literally wanted to get someone out there just so that there was some kind of record that this actually freaking happened, because who the hell is going to believe this story, right? So I called the Game and Fish, and I said, hey, I was just, attacked by a javelina, and I killed it. And, you know, do you want to send someone out here? What's the process? And they said, yeah, we'll send a warden out there and we'll take a look. Well, I don't know if you know a lot about wardens, but there's one per game management unit. And if they're busy doing something else, man, I mean, they may have to call you and take your number or whatever. Well, this guy happened to be relatively in the area, and I hung out. A friend of mine lived nearby, so I went over to my friend's house and hung out for a while. And then the warden called me up. It was like an hour and a half or something. I had to wait a couple hours. So we go over there. We walk up, and he's like, all right, well, let's take a look. So he's like, yeah, the pig's definitely dead. Then he can see, like, literally can see my shotgun shells laying in the snow and, like, my foot drag marks as I'm moving backwards. And he's like, okay, I can tell, like, this is where you stopped and shot it. And he's like, there's this big splatter of blood to when I shot it. I caught him right through the top of his freaking melon. And so it was a nice little blood splatter. And then he literally just curved off and died on the side of the trail. And so he's like, yep, it's a dead javelina. You know? And he's like, it's pretty clear you were trying to get away from it.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know what I mean?
Have a nice day,
sir. I signed a form, and he took care of the rest. So that was it. I mean, I wasn't in the city limits, so I didn't have to worry about calling the police. If I was in city limits, I would have needed to call law enforcement. But because I was in the county, out on national forest land, now I'm going to call the Game and Fish because now this is their jurisdiction. So for me, I mean, just from my own personal experience doing that, that's what I would say. Just either call local law enforcement if you're going to be in the city, or call Game and Fish if you're outside the city if you kill an animal in self-defense, privately owned or otherwise, or game animal. If it's a privately owned animal, law enforcement is going to be concerned because now it's an interpersonal thing. But if it's a game animal, just call Game and Fish and talk to them. You need to go into this, however, if you're going out into the woods, you need to, like any other self-defense situation, you're going to have to think about what's realistic for me. You know what I mean? Where do I need to kill an animal? And this is something, like, we'll cover this a little bit before we move on to the next question. It's something we cover in our CCW class where, you know, if a chihuahua runs into your yard and is nipping at your kids, you probably shouldn't shoot it because it'd be pretty damn hard to articulate the necessity of that level of force. You could kick it, right? I can use physical force to protect myself, no problem, so, or protect other people. So that's easy to articulate. Man, I had to get the dog away from my kid. Now, if a bigger dog, I don't know, a big shepherd or you know, token pit bull or a Rottweiler, I don't know, a big freaking dog shows up and is being menacing and growling and coming towards you or your kid, do you have to wait to get bitten until you use self-defense? No, you don't. You know what I mean? If you can articulate the necessity to use of force. Now, could you just go back inside? Could you just get in your car? All right, well, if you could have done that, and you probably shouldn't blast this thing. But if you're literally backed into a corner and you can't get away, then yeah, use lethal force. But just remember, you got to articulate to people. And for whatever reason, people are super sensitive about killing animals over killing humans. So you're really going to have to be able to articulate this to somebody, that this was absolutely necessary to do. So don't forget about that element. So I hope that answers that question. Next question. Speed, surprise, and violence of action. What's a good way to reprogram a person's thought process to include violence?
Oof. It's a lot of programming, dude.
You start, because I have my own opinion on this.
Oh, my God. That takes a lot. Like, I'm not even sure where you would... I'm not even sure how you would start with that. Like, I know how I've tried it with my kids, and we do it a lot through Nerf gun wars, and my kids being involved in jiu-jitsu now, so now that they understand violence, when to apply it, and how to apply it at their level,
sure,
based on the things that they do. But yeah, that's a lot of programming, man. I mean, you gotta make sure that person is going to be willing to go through those steps. Now, the military has figured out how to do this really well over its history, you know. But you, I don't know, man. That's a good question, and I don't think that's an easy answer for an individual process. I think if you're looking at a team process or a large group process, it's a little bit easier. But I think on the individual level, you just got to figure out what's going to work. And explain it and practice. You know, you really have to practice. It's like in a lot of times in the force-on-force stuff, people don't get violent enough quick enough. Whereas we have other students who are like, nope, fuck you, this is my house.
Yeah, there's...
you know?
This is my house.
So I think that's a very individual thing when you're looking outside of team-based stuff for the military or law enforcement. Yeah, I think it's a very individual process.
Yeah, but I wouldn't even include military law enforcement in people whose proclivity is to get violent.
Oh, I'm not saying as a whole, but the military has figured out how to start that training process for large groups, right? You start with paper targets, human-shaped targets, more human-shaped targets. Humanoid-looking targets, you know, and... Force on force is probably, like, if you're going to do an individual thing here, go find a company that does good quality force on force training. Put that person in force on force training. And they will see quickly, because there's going to be one student in there that's Johnny on the spot that immediately knows which level of violence to go to. You know, then there's going to be the opposite end of that spectrum where that person constantly does not reach the level of violence that's needed. Based on that situation,
I think it's a combination of nature versus nurture, and nature is the stronger one. I think you can nurture someone to a violent capability to an extent. You know, we can teach people the skill sets needed in violent confrontations. We can teach people how to handle violent confrontations, how to avoid violent confrontations, how to recognize violence in other people. We can teach that. When it comes down to just straight up hardcore hurting people. I think you can nurture that, right? We see that in criminal elements, that violent criminals are generally raised in violent environments and they come from violent environments. So I think that that's pretty obvious. That's definitely a nurture thing. That being said, there's plenty of people who are raised in violent environments who aren't violent. And there's plenty of people who are raised in nonviolent environments who are violent.
Yeah, like some serial killers, nature versus nurture. You definitely know it's nature when they pop out and they're killing animals and stuff. They haven't been on the earth long enough to get programmed.
So I think there's a natural part of, like, think about the majority of people that we hang around, right? That we know are violent people.
Right.
Okay. Now think about them, if you can, think about them 20 years ago. How different do you think they were?
Not really that
much. Not as skilled.
Yeah, not as skilled, but not,
right?
Not really that
not different. As capable. But were they less capable or less possible to do violence if needed?
Maybe.
You know? I look at it like this. I love the Captain America story, right? Like, from a comic perspective, I think it's a great story. Look at him for a second, right? Here's this scrawny little Steve Rogers. That dude wanted to do all kinds of violence for his country, but he just couldn't, right?
Right.
Changing into who he became did not make him necessarily more or less violent. Increasing his skills and capabilities increased the impact he was able to have, but overall, he started as who he was. That super serum didn't make Steve Rogers Captain America. Steve Rogers was already Captain America. He doesn't have the capability or the skill set to do that. That's part of what I always drew away from that comic book story, right? It's like that Captain America was always in Steve Rogers.
Right.
Right? That's who he was. The movie does a great job of showing that when he's like, I don't need smarts, I need guts or whatever, Tommy Lee Jones character, and he pops the freaking dummy grenade and throws it, and all of his tough guys are like, oh shit, grenade, and they all jump, and Steve Rogers jumps his body on it. It's like, get back, right? The point is, like, that's already who he was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The serum just gave the capability to now go out and do that thing. And, well, I realize I'm talking about a fucking comic book right now, okay? I'm also getting to the point of, like,
fucking nerd.
I look at my kids, right? Because as a dad, I got to look at my kids and be like, which one of these kids is least capable of defending themselves? You know? Mentally, which one of my kids
or
is,
like, predisposition?
Like, which one of them has the capability to recognize and then appropriate a level of violence necessary to stop the situation? And did I create that in them, or was that something that they were born with? Now, I know that nurture certainly has a big impact on that. The more that we do it, we've seen students over the years who started out pretty passive. But we've also seen, I think people are born with it mostly, and then it just gets woken up. Like, we have students who call me up. They have a catalyst in their life, right?
Right.
They call us up and they go, hey, I just got robbed. Or my friend just got raped. Or I had a family member get assaulted. And I don't want that to happen to me.
Right.
Or this happened to me and it can't happen again. It woke up this idea of, like, caveman violence. I think it's in everybody. Like I think I it's said, in everybody.
Exactly like I said. It's a very personal path to everybody.
But I think most people don't have the capability to wake it up because they either haven't had the catalyst or so much other bullshit has been heaped on top of them.
We live a comfortable life.
That it just doesn't even pass their mind. You know what I mean? Think about people that are even in your life that just think it's insane that you even carry a gun. I mean, to me, I think exposure is the biggest deal, right? Like, I constantly expose people in my life to the stuff that I want them to understand about life. I'm going to expose my kids to violent concepts from the time that they're young all the way until they leave the house, to varying degrees, obviously, from young to old. But it's like, when they're young, we're going to wrestle. We're going to fight. They're going to understand that kind of gladiatorial contact. You know what I mean? They're going to understand that contest of skills, that it's okay to do this. This is actually a good thing to do.
And when to turn it up and when to turn it off.
And when to turn it up and when to turn it down and when to turn it off, right? And when to go from 0 to 100 and when to go from 0 to 20.
Yeah.
You know, because all those things are important to understand. And then as they get older, they're going to be introduced more to how violent the world really is. It's important for my daughters to understand the kind of people that might be coming after them.
Yep.
oh, sweetie, sometimes, you know, stranger danger, someone might, no, someone wants to take you and they want to put you on the sex market, all right? You're going to be a sex slave for somebody, and I'm never going to be able to find you because I ain't fucking Liam Neeson. You know what I mean? They'll scoop you up and they will take you out. Or John local Rambo. Cops, they don't give a fuck, right? So they ain't going to be finding you, all right? And you're going to be gone, man. You're going to be across the border in less than freaking a handful of hours. And I don't have the capability, honestly, or the resources to freaking law. I'll just have to start killing people. Just start in my neighborhood and work out, I guess. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to do that, right?
The body count will be staggering.
And so the point is, it's like, so to avoid all of that from happening, this is what you have to pay attention to. These people aren't allowed to talk to you. These kinds of people aren't allowed to touch you. These kinds of people, like, et cetera, et cetera. Let's be realistic about this stuff so that they understand at least that level of violence. Are they themselves capable of violence? I don't know. But they definitely understand the level of violence that might be presented to them. So I guess to wrap it all up, I would say the more exposure, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no such thing as too much exposure. You know, and without going down the media violence rabbit hole, I don't think that there's
appropriate too much exposure.
Appropriate exposure.
Right.
A fine way to say
it. I think that's,
yeah. So there you go. Can you guys demonstrate sport mucking dialogue on the show? Oh, God. Okay. Yes, to an extent. Let's see. Sport mucking. Oh, man. So mucking, M-U-C, is managing unknown contacts. And managing unknown contacts is a concept that everyone always utilizes, but our friend and my mentor, Craig Douglas, put a name to, right? Mucking. Right. He just put a name. He didn't invent it. Obviously, he just put a name to it, mucking, M-U-C. We talk sometimes in our classes about sport mucking, which is basically when you go out in the world and you just kind of work people over verbally. Now, there's a lot of varying degrees of sport mucking, so I don't know if we can get into a full dialogue, but I'll describe.
I don't know.
I'll describe some basic. The problem is it's hard to sport muck someone that knows they're being sport mucked. So having a dialogue in here, we wouldn't get the appropriate responses. But I will say, like, here's some ways I have sport mucked people, okay? So the concept of managing unknown contacts is essentially determining through a series of verbal, physical, physiological, and even intuitive responses to what you're doing with people, how you're interacting with them, on whether or not they are benign or hostile.
Right.
That's essentially mucking, right? So sport mucking is when we go out almost as the hostile person.
To a degree.
To a slight degree, and get something that we want.
I've done it to people trying to bum money off of me.
So I do it to people trying to bum money off me all the time. Or I will do it to get something that I want. Like, I'll sport muck a hotel to give me an upgrade, or Enterprise rent-a-car guy. And so it's really, sport mucking can be used.
It's persuasive conversation.
It's really persuasive negotiating where really what you're doing is you're thinking, you have to think of yourself more as the hostile side of things. When we normally are mucking to try to avoid a violent conflict, we're normally thinking of ourselves as the good guy. Right. Thus, someone who's capable of violence but isn't the person who's trying to enact, you know, exert our will necessarily on somebody else. But when you're sport mucking, you kind of are playing that
part. Dude, I muck my kids all the time.
It's really just persuasive
conversation
and negotiation. So, and just not letting up. And
oh, yeah.
I think where you cross the line from just like negotiation to sport mucking is that there's no limits.
Right.
Right? Like, you can say things, you can always say these things, but to really be sport mucking, you'll say things that you might not otherwise say to somebody because you want to see if you're going to get a certain reaction from folks. And where this can be dangerous is you do not possess the ability to read someone well from the beginning.
Right.
So, like, as an example, a sport mucking story goes that a guy was asking for some gas. Have you heard the story?
I don't think so.
Fill up the, if you don't put that gas in a car, I'm going to kill you. Have you heard the story?
No.
Okay. So a guy is asking for some gas, okay? And this is not my story. This is a sport mucking story from someone else. So I'm not going to name because I don't want this to get back to him. But they're asking for some fuel. And this person is a friend of ours, is with another person who's a friend of ours. And they're like, hey, let's have some fun with this guy. So as they're walking through the parking lot, this guy's hitting everyone up. And he's got an empty gas can. And so one of our friends says, hey, man, we'll help you. Right? The sport mucking begins. Hey, dude, we'll help you. And the guy's like, really? He's like, absolutely. And the guy's like, well, I only need like $10 or $20 to to fill this gas can or whatever it was. And so they're like, hey, no problem, dude. Tell you what, there's a gas station across the street. We'll go over there and we'll fill the gas can for you, right? Like, we're going to help you, you know? And they're like, they've like, one of our buddies has his arm around the guy. Like, this is sport mucking to the max, right? Again, we're playing the part of the hostile engagement, right? So it's like, he's like, yeah, we'll walk over. Then the guy's like, oh, shit, right? This dude's like, oh, crap. So he starts going, like, oh, no, I don't want to trouble you guys. No big deal, man. Like, honestly, it'd be easy. Like, I just take the cash, blah, 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 blah. So our other buddy goes, no problem, dude. We'll totally give you the cash. But here's the deal. If I give you this $20 bill and you don't fill that gas can and then go, I don't want you to go put it in a car, I'm going to kill you. Now, hold on just a second while you think about this, because you're like, oh my God, you would say that to another human being?
Absolutely.
And people are like, well, wait, hold on a second. What if he calls the cops? That's always the question we get asked in classes where we're teaching.
I don't know what this guy's talking about. I never said that to him.
Well, hold on just a second. You think this guy's going to go call the cops?
No.
No, he's definitely not calling the cops. He doesn't want any conversations with the cops, right? So this guy just locks it up and is like, what?
Sorry, what?
You know? And he's like, yeah, no problem, man. Here's the cash. Go put the money into the gas can, and then we'll want to see you go fill up a car. But if you don't do that, and I give you this cash, but you don't go fill up a car, I'm going to kill you. Like, that's part of sport mucking. And it sounds terrible. That's like an extreme version of it, okay?
It's like making people do the hokey pokey to get $5 from you in a parking
lot. Or when we gave mayonnaise to a person one time.
Bless you. Go fuck yourself.
Someone thought we were giving him spare change after we mucked him a little bit, and instead we gave him a handful of mayonnaise.
Partially opened mayonnaise packets found in the back seat of a van.
Gusting.
That sat in there for a week while we were at SHOT Show. The point is like sport mucking.
It's sport.
It's for sport. It's just for fun. But it could be dangerous because, like, football is a sport. Right. It's dangerous to me to go suit up with a bunch of NFL guys and play because I don't know how to fucking read any of those guys. Right. I don't know the sport. This guy's calling them Blue 40. I don't know what the fuck that means. The ball's going to get snapped. I'm going to get killed. All right? I'm like 5'9", 180, guys. I'm not – I don't belong anywhere on an NFL fucking football line. All right?
No.
All right? I'm like a kicker, maybe. All right? You know
what I mean? Yeah, kind of short
for I'm kind of short for a kicker, right? So, like, my point is, like, if you want to play the game, fine. But
be careful.
There's risks.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to read your opponent, if you don't know how to play the game, you could get yourself in a really tight situation. So think probably the average person needs to think more of sport mucking as using persuasive argumentation with kind of no limits. Remove any social based or social limits that you think you have and kind of say anything you want just to see what kind of result you will get.
Yeah. And before you start, figure out how far you're willing to go.
Figure how far you're willing to go and then kind of go from there. And what you're trying to do is you're going to leverage everything that you know about this person. And what you're looking for is, when you're mucking, you're looking at the environment. You're looking at the people. You're looking at what they're doing, what they're wearing, how they're acting, who they're interacting with, how they're interacting with you. There's a lot of things that are going to tell you about what their intentions are, whether they're benign or hostile. So, like, I was in a hotel one time. We'll say this last story and move on to the next question. But it's like, I was in a hotel one time, and I really wanted an upgraded room. and I knew they had the availability because it wasn't very busy. And it was my goal became, I'm going to get into, like, one of those big two-room suites. Right, from like a regular hotel, but I'm not going to pay anything more. Now, a lot of times you can just go to the front desk. Honestly, I travel enough, and anyone who travels enough knows that most of the time with the freaking rental car people,
you ask politely, and you're not a dickhead. You can just ask
politely, and you'll get
something.
Most of the time, they'll hook you up, right? So I thought, well, let's see how far I can go with this guy. So I go there, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, I was just wondering, I'm here for a couple nights on a business trip. Is there any way I can get a upgraded room, dude? You know, like, I know you guys are only, like, half full. I paid attention. There's not really a lot of people here. And he's like, I don't know. You know, I'm like, hey, dude, like, any kind of upgrade would be nice. Honestly, I really appreciate it. I like staying at your guys' hotel. You know, just kind of trying, just doing the nice guy thing. And he's like, yeah, let me see what I can do. So he's like, well, he's like, right now we have you in one with two queens, which for whatever reason I got two queens. He's like, but I could put you in, like, a nicer one with a king that has a better view. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that would be pretty good. But, I mean, is that really how you got Employee of the Month? Because you're three times up here on the board with Employee of the Month, dude. You got Employee of the Month doing this kind of shit? Giving me one king as opposed to queen, two queens? You know? And so it's like you start in with – you kind of start in with stuff like that. And it's like, look, dude, there's a lot of hotels that I could stay at here, right? And so now I'm like – I'm already halfway around the fucking counter at this point. I'm no longer standing. There's no counter between us.
Yeah.
Right now I'm halfway around the counter just looking into this guy's
– It's the car salesman concept.
It's exactly what it is. Like, because car salesmen are car amazing sport muckers.
Absolutely.
Any good salesman is a phenomenal mucker.
They're like, oh, I'll give you – you know, we'll take $500 off the top of that. Well, now you're indebted to that guy because he gave you something for free.
Right. So, like, that's a good example of this, like, benign sport mucking. Yeah. Where I'm not going to hurt anybody. And the moral of the story is, in the end, I ended up getting the thing I wanted. Because it was just, you just keep going.
You find the right button and you keep
And you just keep going. And you won't back off. And you won't, like, where a normal nice person is going to back off on something, you don't. But again, you have to be able to read your opponent and know when you're going too far. And we'll have, you know, we've had guys tell stories about sport mucking, like, almost turned into, like, sexual harassment or something. And it's like, you can't do that. Like, you don't want to be the bad guy when you're sport mucking, but you're definitely taking the more hostile route trying to get, you know, what you want or mess with people like panhandlers or whatever. So, that's just something to think about if you want to get involved in sport mucking. So thanks for the questions. More questions. Let's see here. Water storage purification and availability in austere environments. Or maybe that's kind of three. Water storage, purification, and availability in austere environments. Water storage, I think we could sum up by saying store as much as you can at all times.
Yep.
We live in a desert.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying attention to what's going on with the aquifers, you need to start paying more attention. If you're not paying attention to what's going on with the power situation in Arizona, you need to start paying more attention. Store as much water as you can. Remember that your water heater is a storage unit. Store freeze bottles full of water and fill up your freezer with them. Yep. They, you know, full freezers are more efficient. And if the power goes out, you have a whole bunch of ice now to keep things cool for a little bit longer. And you can thaw all that out and have some water. Look at every way. If you have a pool, you have tons of water storage. Get a Berkey Black and you can remove all those nasty chemicals from the water. However, you'll also need to make sure you put mineral additives back into the water because a Berkey Black literally removes everything.
Yep.
So you have to have mineral additives to go back into the water so that you can get the normal stuff that you're supposed to be getting out of water. You know, look at water storage tanks, drums, bins, outdoor containers, indoor containers. If you have some land, why do you not have a 10 to 20,000 gallon water tank on your property? There's no reason to not have that. And, you know, put it up on a stand or hide it in the bushes or whatever. Like, you have the property and the capability to do that. It's like water storage is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important. Make sure. I mean, look at movies like The Book of Eli. Water was literally currency in that movie because of how hard it was to come by. So water storage, store as much as you can. If you even think for a second that there's about to be a blip in your water, I mean, you, like, maybe you're paying attention, you see some kind of crazy, I don't know, natural disaster coming down the pike or something like that, dude, plug all your tubs, start filling up water, plug all your sinks, start filling up water, grab every available cup, bowl, saucer, plastic bag, I don't give a shit, and start filling up with water. You know what I mean? Just keep water as much as you can. Rotate potable drinking water often, any kind of standing water, make sure it's being treated and rotated, treated appropriately with bleach or other water treatment sources. Just make sure you're rotating your water supply on a fairly regular basis. I would say every year, at least every 6 months, some people do, that's fine. Or put something in, you know, like a 50 gallon water drum and go out and just use that until, you know, it's gone, and then fill it back up, or as you're using it, be filling it back up or whatever. But definitely store water. Availability in austere environments. Always look for low places. Always look for sandy spots. Always look for greenery and shrubbery and trees that don't exist wherever you're supposed to be. You know, big cottonwoods in the desert, for example, is a pretty good source. There's probably water nearby. Typically, you can go down there somewhere, find a low spot, find some, you know, some sandy areas to start digging. You know, and sooner or later, your hole's going to start filling up with water, even if it's just a little at a time. If you're going to drink water from austere environments, I've drank a lot of water from austere environments over the years for any number of reasons. Be prepared to drink water that doesn't look like America water. And if you've ever been to a foreign country, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Only Americans' water is so freaking clear, right? Very, very few other countries have as clear water as we have. It's like a necessity for Americans to drink clear water. But realize the rest of the world doesn't drink clear water. They barely drink clean water, much less clear water. Really great purification systems I like are things like the LifeStraw family setup, the Berkey Black, the individual LifeStraws. Those are all relatively inexpensive, easy to utilize systems, you know, and use those things. You know, the Sawyers, the Platypuses, all good, you know, gravity filters that you can use that filter water cleanly over time. So, you know, look at those kinds of processes. Obviously, things like MSR and Catadine and all those have their own, you know, pump waters and water filters, whatever. So have some type of way to filter the water, especially if you're going to be in an austere environment. I like the LifeStraws because you can literally just pop off the caps and drink straight out of the source. You know, once you filter out any grains or chunky stuff, which you definitely should do first.
Yeah.
But anything to add to that?
No. No, that's pretty much it. The minimum is 1 gallon per person per day. That's the absolute bare minimum.
Yeah.
It's 1 gallon per person per day.
And I would actually say, I would actually disagree with that because I think that that's a commonly said thing. I believe it's 2 gallons because it's you need a gallon just to fucking drink. You know what I mean? If you're active at all doing shit, which if you're low on water, you're probably going to be doing some shit because it means other shit's going wrong too. So I think it's like a gallon to drink and then a gallon to wash and cook and do all that kind of stuff. So I would say if you're planning, 2 gallons per person is what you should plan for, with one being a absolute bare minimum. Like we could make this work if we had to, but it's really not preferable. And always be looking. When you're out hiking, hunting, camping, recreating, always be looking for your nearest water source just to train yourself to always be looking for a nearby water source. And then get out there and practice, you know, digging water up. Get out there and practice filtering water. Everyone thinks they know it, and then they get out there and there's some tricks to the trade, but they don't know those until it's too late because they never practiced it. So get out there and learn the process for sure. The passé of Kydex and fancy retention to the inevitable resurgence of thumb snap nylon. I don't think that's going to happen. Why not? Because thumb snap nylon sucks.
Yep.
And Kydex is king. Yep. Is there maybe another product that could come out that could be better than Kydex? Sure.
Is there?
It's possible.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're always advancements in all kinds of shit. But I'm not waiting anytime soon for nylon to come back into play.
But also at a certain point, you reach a point of diminishing returns if you continue to try to improve on something.
Yeah. If sharks had opposable thumbs.
They'd still be in the water, so it wouldn't really make that big of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, if sharks had opposable thumbs.
They'd also need arms. Because you can't put an opposable thumb on the end of a fucking fin.
Well, I think you can. I think that's kind of the question, right? Is if there was a thumb on the end of a fin, right, like this, then they could grab stuff. But the problem with a shark having an opposable thumb was,
what are they going to grab? Think about where their fins are.
Well, that's my point, is that they can't. Their flexibility, the fins, is not enough. And look, I love sharks.
You can't clap their fins together.
They can't even clap, so they can't bring them together. So the benefit could be as they could grab things for later. Like they might be able to hold on to a fish.
It's going
to
fuck up their hair. They're not going to be able to swim right if they're holding on to things.
But what
it's going to screw up the whole system.
What if they use it like alligator style? Like somebody's whaling and they see, you know, the shark sees the boat, jumps up, grabs John, takes him to the bottom, swims down there until John's not moving no more, and then just eats him up.
Yeah?
Yeah. That'd be fucking scary.
Just grab you and drag you to the bottom?
Yeah.
I feel like they would be better doing that with their teeth than their shitty little opposable
thumb attached to the fin. Nature has it worked out? Kind of perfected how the shark thing works.
Yeah, but if they had thumbs to really make it work better, they'd also have to have arms.
Exactly.
Yeah. They'd have to have a better reach.
Yeah. They're like thumbs out here.
Yeah, it's useless. Yeah. Man. Useless.
No good.
That's like T-Rex having thumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he essentially did. He had
grabs. He had like pinchers.
He had three
fingers. So
he could grab things.
Yeah, but he had really small arms.
But he had tiny arms. But his arms reach. Were to, like, once he was squatting down on something. You guys watching this? I hope you're enjoying this. Yeah. He's squatting down. Yeah,
Sean is mimicking.
He can hold
it. Get up on the table and demonstrate it, John.
No.
So,
no.
All right. Let's see. So I think, okay, we saw that one. Front door claim wars. This was a question specifically for John. Is that, okay, front door claim wars. First of all, disclaimer.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
You can't get a claymore on the public market. Also, we're not going to tell you how to make one.
No.
But let's just say that
absolutely
you,
not.
But let's just say that you could make one relatively easy out of the majority of household supplies you probably already have laying around. Let's just say.
Oh, I know for a fact.
Let's just say that you could. Let's just say that you could, not even for a fact, all right? Let's just hypothesize here for a second, John.
Okay.
Would you put a claymore on your front door?
Contextually, yes. I would also have them further away than my front door because my front door is kind of the last line.
Okay.
I would have them spaced out further and evenly around, say, a perimeter or on a specific lane of approach or a lane of egress. So let's say someone managed to approach and then they got there and I was like, mm-mm, and they're like, never mind. So now they're going to egress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now as they're egressing, they're going to catch one, you know.
Clickety clack.
Bam. See you later, bro. Zing, zing, zing. Ha, 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 ha.
See, I would, if I hypothetically knew how to make a claymore, I would strap it to my chest.
Why?
Because in the possibility that they
pull the bag, daddy?
That they breached all freaking defenses.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, take them out with me.
Pull a bag, daddy.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No, no.
Look, dude, if I'm going to get captured anyway, I'm going for this. I'm doing this.
I'm not worried.
Liam Neeson's not my dad. He's not coming to save me.
Yeah, you're right.
Toaster's broken, dude.
Toaster's broken. No one's coming to save you. All right. Land nav. What is it? Where am I? It's getting dark. I love some of these questions. Land nav. What is it? I will say this about land navigation skills. Most people don't have them.
Mine are weak.
Most people have incredibly poor land nav skills. And I mean basic land nav skills. And I'll tell you what my theory is on the whole damn thing. The phones.
Technology.
Access.
Back in the day, right, which was a Wednesday, we had to know street names. We had to be able to navigate north, south, east, and west. We had to be able to understand basic, you know, distance estimation. Like if someone's like, it's like a quarter mile down the road. Good luck telling someone right now that something's a quarter mile down the road.
Yeah.
People have no idea what the hell that means. They, like, instantly they'll be like, quarter mile down the road, let me pull up my Google Maps. If it's not next door, I better pull up my Google Maps. Where is it? How do I get there? What I try to do to keep that down is I like to look up the general directions on Google Maps.
Yeah.
And then try to get there. Like, okay, I'm going to make a right on this. I'm going to travel 3 miles. And then I'm going to make a left on this. Then I'm going to travel 5 miles. Then I'm going to make a right on this. And then it's going to be on the right-hand side. And the address is 2231 or whatever it is. And so then that gives me the opportunity to really just kind of stress those skills a little bit. But yeah, land nav, I would say most people are losing it.
No, you can't tell anybody. Like Phoenix, for example, is one giant grid square, literally. Like you cannot fuck it up. If you tell somebody north, like in Phoenix, they should know where north is because it's so easy to navigate north, south, east, west. Nobody fucking knows. People look at me like I got a dick growing out of my forehead when I'm like, oh, I live on the south side of my apartment complex. They're like, where the fuck is that?
Where's the south side of the apartment complex, So I would say if there's a skill that probably you need to work on, it's basic land nav. Like the sun, the stars, simple shit, man. It's fall time. You got Orion pointing towards the south, and you got Polaris always visible with the Big Dipper in the north. Like these are easy nighttime navigational tools.
I just learned something. I didn't know that.
What's that?
What you just said.
Orion?
Yeah.
So
I don't stars.
Orion is a hunter's constellation.
I know what Orion is.
I'm saying, but I'm just going to tell you the time. So it typically comes up around the beginning of August when, quote unquote, hunting season begins. And then it sets around the end of March when hunting season, quote unquote, ends typically. And essentially what it's doing is it's it's chasing the sun.
Yeah.
And so Orion, if you line him up from head to toe, actually points directly south. So he'll come like, if this hand was south, Orion rises like this in the night and literally just goes around the southern border.
See, I learned something.
Yeah. It's really easy. Like, it's really easy constellation to pick out. You know? I'll show you next time we're out at night. I'll show you how to line it up properly. Because some people line it up improperly because Orion's body kind of sort of makes an X with the bow in his body and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not everybody actually knows everyone knows Orion's belt, but when it comes to the rest of the constellation, people get a little confused. So if you don't line it up properly, you'll be heading in the wrong direction. But if you line up his body properly, it literally points directly south.
Nice.
So, but if you're out recreating, like most people are in those cooler months, we'll say August to March, cooler-ish.
Ish.
December to March for us.
Depends on where you're at.
Depends on where you're at. Then, and you have a clear sky, man. You can use Orion. You can use North Star. You can use the sun. You know, it's pretty easy to use the sun. You can set up basic compasses with the sun, set up a sundial, set up sun markers. I mean, it's like, dude, it's not that fucking hard. It's really not. Like, this is basic level shit I teach to small children. It's not that hard to do this shit. Get out there and figure out how to do it, because one day it might really come in handy for you. So, SVD. So there was literally an acronym posted, SVD. So we're going to start with SDV. We have singular value decomposition. In linear algebra, the SVD, or singular value decomposition, is a factorization of a real or complex matrix. It is the generalization of the Eigen decomposition of a positive semi-definite normal matrix, for example, a symmetric matrix with non-negative eigenvalues, to any M times N matrix via an extension of the polar decomposition. It has many useful applications in signal processing and statistics. Right. What? All right, so singular value decomposition, I think, is not what they were talking about.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and head out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to head out. All right, so perhaps with SVD, they were talking about spontaneous vaginal delivery, which occurs when a pregnant female goes into labor without the use of drugs or techniques to induce labor and delivers her baby in the normal manner without forceps, vacuum extraction, or a cesarean section. Spontaneous vaginal delivery. Not how I would have defined that, but we'll go with their definition.
Yeah, I thought that was just called birth.
Yeah, I thought that's what it was called too. It might also have been asking about swine vesicular disease, which is an acute contagious viral disease of swine caused by swine vesicular disease virus, which is an enterovirus. It is characterized by fever and vesicles with subsequent ulcers in the mouth and on the snout, feet, and teats. The pathogen is relatively resistant to heat and can persist for a long time in salted, dried, and smoked meat products. Swine vesicular disease does not cause economically important disease, but it is important due to its similarity to foot and mouth disease. So they might have been asking about that. They might have also been asking about small vessel disease. Also SVD. A lot of SVDs out there. Small vessel disease is a condition in which the walls of the small arteries in the heart are damaged. The condition causes signs and symptoms of heart disease, such as angina or chest pain. Small vessel disease is sometimes called coronary microvascular disease or small vessel heart disease. It's often diagnosed after a doctor finds little or no narrowing in the main arteries of your heart, despite your having symptoms that suggest heart disease. Now, this is a gun show, so they might have also been asking about the SVD Dragunov, which is honestly what I hope they were asking about, because I don't know anything about that other shit other than what I read on fucking Wikipedia just now. So the SVD Dragunov, of course, if you're unfamiliar with it, I don't know what the fuck. In fact, if you go to independencetraining.com and you go to About Us and Instructors, you actually see John's instructor photo is of him in the prone shooting an actual no-shit freaking Dragunov. The Dragunov is chambered in seven.
Least comfortable gun I've ever shot in my life.
Amazingly uncomfortable
gun.
Dude,
even with the mag in it, it doesn't weigh much more than a fucking tin can.
Yeah.
Because it's all stamped. Skeletonized plastic fucking buttstock or wood, depending on time frame. Mm. And the end of it, it's got a steel plate on it.
And it's chambered in the wonderful and light recoiling 7.62x54R. And it will pound the shit out of you.
Sucks so bad to shoot.
So if you've never shot a Dragunov, you're really missing out. They are really cool. It's actually on my list of guns to buy. And I don't want a PSL. I want a legit Dragunov. They're very expensive.
But you are far less likely to get scope stamp if you use the appropriate scope.
I want an actual Dragunov with the actual Dragunov scope.
Because it's
cool
got
rubber.
Yeah, it's cap. Got like the rubber. It's like on the thermal or the night vision. Mm-hmm. You have to put a little bit of pressure on it.
Yep.
To open it up so you can see through the optic. Mm-hmm. Because glass in Russia was not cheap. It was already really shitty.
So they wanted to.
So they had to find a way to protect it.
Yep. So I don't know what this person was asking about. I hope maybe they sent us a message at some point in time, but and let us know what
super
which,
cool gun to shoot.
Which one of those SVDs like, they were talking about. Sucked, but hopefully you're talking about the Dragunov. So very cool gun to shoot, amazingly capable caliber. We have a Vepr in 7.62x54R. Holy shit, that's a cool freaking gun.
Hard hitter.
You know what? It's not too bad with some of the basic ammo, but actually the best ammo it groups with is also the hardest hitting. I mean, it's like the kind of ammo that you shoot one time and you're like,
ooh,
don't really want to do that too many more times. But it's a hell of a freaking cool gun. So so there we go. We actually took all the time with those questions. So
perfect.
I'm amazed. I didn't think we had enough questions, but we did. So if you guys have any other questions that we missed out on, you want us to answer them, please feel free to email us, and we'll answer them on maybe like our arms room story or something like that. Yeah. So there you go. all right. Anything else? No?
No.
All right. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. Let us know what you want to do and how you want to do it. You host us. You train for free, so it's a great opportunity to get some free training from us. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear.
Yeah, buddy.
Don't forget also to check out AR 500 Armor and their new Valkyrie carrier, which is, I believe, Barry compliant, 100% U.S. made. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows on the network. A lot of cool stuff there. Next week, we're going to be talking about how to select optics for your go-to carbine or rifle. We'll talk about what a go-to carbine or rifle might consist of, as well as how to select the appropriate optic, because, man, does that question come up for us a lot in
there's
classes.
There's a ton of shit out there.
Well, out of whatever, 14 students or 15 students, whatever we had yesterday, I mean, we spent a lot of time just talking about optics and reticles and that. So that's what we're going to be covering next week. Until then, you guys, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.